This is a State of Opportunity special on Michigan Radio. I'm Dustin Dwyer. We're talking this hour about the importance of early education for kids raised in poverty. We're talking mostly about preschool. One thing we haven't really talked about yet is that one of the things preschool does is it shifts some of the responsibility for a child's development onto someone else. If we're talking about public-funded preschool programs, that responsibility, in some sense, is being shifted to taxpayers like you and me. In a few minutes, we're going to talk about whether it's worth our money. But I think we should talk first about how preschool actually came into existence in this country. Because Head Start is not where that story begins. I want to introduce you now to a guy named
Maris Vanaskis.
And he's
the Bentley Professor of History at the University of Michigan.
What Vanaskis studies is the history of education policy in the United States. He told me that preschool was big in the early 1800s. Vanaskis says the idea actually came from Europe during the Industrial Revolution. Americans traveling abroad saw these new preschools popping up in England.
And what they did then is they adopted the idea that we should have 2- and 3- and 4-year-olds going to schools in America and giving the mothers a chance to either work or relieving them of having as much childcare because the family size was much larger.
Vanaskis says the original impulse was not all that different from what Lyndon Johnson imagined for Head Start more than 100 years later. It was a way to help kids in poor families. But just like with Head Start, the idea spread to middle-class parents as well.
By 1840, when we have very good data for Massachusetts, 40% of 3-year-olds are now in school. And this is a very high number.
It's a high number even by today's standards. And these kids were actually learning things. Vanaskis says children were expected to be able to read the Bible by age 4 or 5. But then this guy comes along. A doctor.
A very prominent doctor of mental health, Amariah Brigham.
Who was, in fact, the founding editor of what is today called the American Journal of Psychiatry. Brigham had some ideas about the education of children, and a shocking claim.
His medical practices showed that young children who are exposed to early learning are more apt to later become insane.
Insane! Brigham put his ideas in a book, Remarks on the Influence of Mental Cultivation and Mental Excitement Upon Health. You can read the entire book online, and it is quite a read. Brigham argues that early learning taxes young brains before they're ready, causing excessive blood flow that damages the brain, leading to both physical and mental problems, and even early death. This book was a sensation, according to Vanaskis, and it ended the preschool movement in America.
By 1860, there are almost no 3- or 4-year-olds in Massachusetts schools.
That's the way it stayed for 100 years. Throughout the first half of the 20th century, parents still believed that young brains couldn't handle learning. And people forgot that preschool had ever been a thing.
We discovered infant schools 20, 30 years ago. Before that, historians didn't even know they existed.
Vanaskis says when early learning advocates started pushing for Head Start in the 1960s, they all thought that it was a brand new idea. You are listening to a State of Opportunity special on Michigan Radio. I'm Dustin Dwyer. And next, I want to take you to a large sunlit room in Battle Creek. In one part of the room, Diego pushes little police cars and trucks across the carpet. In another, Maya puts plastic toppings on a toy pizza and asks her mom to take a bite. Laraya Todd is pressing stamps on a sheet of white paper while her dad Darren watches. This is not preschool. This is a playgroup put on by Early Childhood Connections in Battle Creek. We should say that this playgroup is funded by the Kellogg Foundation, which also funds State of Opportunity. The playgroup is for kids who aren't in any kind of preschool. It meets every Friday. Every Friday, Darren brings Laraya.
She's very energetic. She likes to play a lot. She's really into learning. She really wants to go to school. This here is like a almost like a type of school for her. So it's a school setting, so she likes it. Makes her feel like she's, you know, a little older.
How old are you right now?
3.
What do you like to do here?
I like to stamp.
You like to stamp?
Mm-hmm.
What's your favorite stamp?
Star.
Lariah has been hoping for a chance to take her stamp skills to the next level and go to preschool. But there wasn't enough room in the public preschools for Lariah to go. When I talked to them in November, Darren told me they were on a waiting list until a spot opens up.
It's been a while now, but hopefully it should be soon.
That was in November. I called Darren last week. He says Lariah is still on the wait list. In Michigan, there are two main programs that offer free preschool to children in low-income families, Head Start and the state-run Great Start Readiness Program. But between these two, there still aren't enough seats available. GSRP doesn't even accept three-year-olds like Lariah. The governor is expected to increase funding for GSRP in the budget coming out next month. We're going to talk a little later about what's on the table for expanding preschool. But first, let's just ask whether we even should be spending money on preschool. We've talked about how it can help kids in poverty, but we haven't yet talked about what the rest of us get out of it and whether it's worth the money. So let's bring back someone we heard from earlier, economist Tim Bartik from the Upjohn Institute. Now, he didn't start out studying preschool. He studied economic development strategies like business tax incentives or new sports stadiums. Then he got an email from an advocacy group that asked him to analyze the benefits of preschool on purely economic merits.
My first reaction was just a crazy email and really bad idea. It didn't make any sense to me.
But then he says he thought about what preschool does, which is, of course, to develop children's abilities. And that should eventually make them better workers, which should have an economic effect. For Bartik, this was a different way of looking at things. Usually when we talk about economic development, we're talking about either trying to grow or attract businesses with tax breaks, infrastructure improvements, or whatever.
So they're usually very much focused on what, you know, what economists would call labor demand. That is, we're trying to affect directly the behavior of firms.
We want the firms because the firms want workers.
And what occurred to me was that you could analyze early childhood programs as one way of, rather than working on the labor demand side, working on the labor supply side and boosting the quality of the local labor supply.
That way, the firms would want us because we have the best workers. Bartik analyzed the numbers, trying to figure out how much of an economic improvement you could get out of early childhood programs. And that turned into a book called Investing in Kids. It is a 350-page investigation of the economic returns of preschool. And spoiler alert, preschool pays off. It easily pays off just as well as other types of economic development, such as tax breaks. And Bartik isn't the only economist who's come to this conclusion. There's a whole literature now on the economic merits of preschool. Probably the most famous economist working on this literature is James Heckman. He's famous because in 2000, he won the Nobel Prize in Economics. He's a professor at the University of Chicago. He looks sort of like you would expect an economist to look. White hair, dark suit, round glasses. And he can get pretty excited about data. In the 1990s, he came across some data that was not exciting. At the time, there was a lot of interest in genetics. There was new research showing that a person's IQ was largely determined by genetics, and that IQ was by far the best predictor of how successful a person could be in life. Basically, people were stuck where they started out.
So I got a little depressed by that, and then I realized that you actually had, there was evidence, scattered evidence, that suggested that if you started early enough, you could actually make a difference.
Some of that evidence came from a project that started in Ypsilanti in the 1960s. It was a famous project called the Perry Preschool Project. There were a lot of aspects to Perry, but one important thing to know is that all of the kids enrolled in the program were from high-poverty homes. And on one measure, at least, the program was a failure.
The kids were entered at age 3 and 4. By age 10, the IQs of the kids in the program were no smarter than those randomized out. No difference.
This supported the depressing research Heckman had come across in the 1990s. There was no benefit to IQ for the kids in Perry preschools.
But yet, 40 years later, they have much greater social and economic participation, higher earnings, The girls go to school much more. The boys are making money. They're employed much more than the boys who weren't in the program. Much less crime.
These results probably sound familiar if you were around for our discussion on Head Start. And it turns out this is common in preschool studies. Test scores often fade in elementary school. Then other benefits show up later in the form of higher graduation rates, higher earnings, and less crime. Heckman realized these benefits have an economic value. So he did what economists do, a benefit-cost calculation for the Perry Preschool Project. He says every dollar invested in Perry created a rate of return for society of about 6 to 10% per year. This result, just like the result Bartik got, was pretty conclusive. But it still didn't explain why preschool pays off. And we need to understand that. The key for Heckman was to stop caring so much about IQ.
The science of education, so-called science of education in the 1960s, was all based on cognitive psychology. And the measure of what schools created was IQ. And so you say, okay, IQ is very important, and it is important. But what it also missed was there were all these other traits that somehow got lost.
These were the traits that were emphasized at the Perry Preschool Project. Heckman says the Perry preschoolers planned out their activity for the day, they did the activity, and then they reviewed the activity. It was an exercise of keeping kids on task, teaching them persistence and self-control.
So it was teaching these social skills. Some people say teaching character. And that's the hidden dimension of this program, which is totally ignored in our current public policy.
But it's a hidden dimension that just keeps coming up in this discussion. It's not about ABCs or numbers. It's about the child's ability to control themselves, to focus on work. Heckman calls it character. Bartik called it soft skills. People who study the brain call it executive functions. It's hard to measure these things on a test. But to Heckman, and to many other researchers, these are the skills that make the most difference for children's success and for the success of our economy. That's why economists care about preschool. I told Heckman that legislators in Michigan would be considering an increase to public preschool funding this year, and I asked if he had any advice. He said, look at Perry.
So I would say the legislature of Michigan should use its local wisdom in Ypsilanti.
We're going to try to tap into that local wisdom next. But first, I want to remind you, you're listening to a State of Opportunity special on Michigan Radio. My name is Dustin Dwyer. So, the Perry Preschool Project is still in operation, run by an organization called HiScope. Anyone can go check it out. I mean, I haven't. But my colleague Jennifer Guerra has, and she let me borrow some of her tape to share with you. The kids come in around 8:30. And Jennifer says they make their way to a big blue rug for some story time.
Buenas noches, elefantes.
Then they read the message board to learn what's new in the class that day.
The keeper says goodnight to the elephant.
Then it's time to plan.
If your name starts with D, D, go to your planning table. Delilah.
This is part of what makes the Perry preschool model unique, something they call plan, do, review.
You're going to use the little blocks today. What do you think?
Once the students plan their activities for the day, they have about an hour to do those activities. And it's all child-initiated play, whether it's mushing up Play-Doh into a birthday cake, building a fort out of blocks, or crawling around like a puppy. The preschool director, Sue Gainsley, says once the hour is up, the kids return to their small groups and review what they did.
And what has been shown is children who are intentional and make these plans often develop more complex play. They begin to think about materials in different ways.
And she says they develop the kind of skills we've been talking about. They're focused and thoughtful. They have the self-control to carry out their plan. Larry Schweinhart is president of HiScope, which runs Perry. He says a high-quality pre-K program must have four main ingredients: engaged parents, a way to evaluate students, active learning, and good teachers. The last ingredient is the hardest to carry out for most preschools. It costs money to hire highly trained teachers with bachelor's degrees. Many preschool programs pay their teachers less than half of what most K-12 public school teachers make. And Schweinhart says two-thirds of the cost of a high-quality pre-K goes to pay teachers. And if you don't spend the money, you won't get the results that Perry's gotten. And the HiScope Perry preschool costs a lot, roughly $11,000 per child per year. That's more than three times the cost of the state-funded Great Start Readiness pre-K program. Now, Jennifer Guerra pressed Schweinhart on this high cost.
you're effectively asking a lot of people to help pay for other people's children mm-hmm. to get into preschool.
Because if you don't pay for them with early childhood education, you're going to pay more for them because they're going to suck up services from the community and from the schools. They're going to be winding up being very costly because they're engaging in crime. And we wind up paying through the nose.
Schweinhart ultimately says the question is, pay now or pay later? Now, first, there is no chance that the state of Michigan is going to increase preschool funding to the level that Perry does. Not anytime soon, anyway. But the High Scope Foundation actually did an analysis of the state's current preschool program and found good results. And Governor Snyder said in his State of the State last week that he wants a funding increase to allow more kids to attend. Right now, the state estimates that 29,000 four-year-olds meet the eligibility requirements to attend free state-funded preschool, but there's not enough money to fit them in. Advocates were hoping that the state would increase funding enough to have spaces for all of those four-year-olds, which would cost an estimated $130 million a year.
I don't believe we can accomplish all that, and I'm open to coming up with creative ideas to get there. But I think it's important we make a major commitment, a major budget commitment, to get as many kids in as possible and get us on a path to getting all those kids in Great Start and an early childhood program.
The number that's been tossed around since the speech would be an increase of about $75 million in next year's budget. That would still leave thousands of four-year-olds without access to preschool, but it's a pretty huge increase compared to the current budget. And maybe we should just leave it at that. But if you heard the governor's speech last week, you know that preschool was not one of its main topics. It really only took about 30 seconds. The governor's biggest request was for more road funding. $1 billion a year in road funding. $100 million was too much to spend on preschool. But the governor is fighting for 10 times that amount with roads. And it'll require essentially a tax hike. The governor estimates it'll cost about $120 per year per vehicle. Tim Bartik at the Upjohn Institute says universal preschool for every four-year-old in the state would cost about $30 per person a year. Now, we all know how bad Michigan's roads are. Lots of people want improved roads, and every analysis I could find supports the basic claim the governor's making, that roads have a good return on investment. But so does preschool. What the governor is saying about making our roads fund solvent is...
it's time.
What he says about giving all disadvantaged four-year-olds a chance at preschool is...
I don't believe we can accomplish all that.
The governor's official budget proposal should be out within a few weeks. We'll see what he decides we can accomplish with preschool. You've been listening to State of Opportunity from Michigan Radio. This documentary was informed by the Public Insight Network. Thanks to Jennifer Guerra and Sarah Alvarez. Vincent Duffy and Sarah Hewlett did the editing. Tamar Charney is the executive producer of State of Opportunity. This program is a production of Michigan Radio, a broadcasting service of the University of Michigan. I'm Dustin Dwyer.
Support for State of Opportunity comes from the W.K. Kellogg Foundation, a partner with communities where children come first.